Dear Shooter, what is the safe distance from the creepy guy staring at you out in public, and what do you do about it? I guess you could take that market-hyped-up class with tactical reloads. Just remember, this isn't Call of Duty, and there isn't going to be a start again button. But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Yeah, no. I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made that
clip
weird.
On, it's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that? That isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Dear Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
God, where do I start with all that? How far do I stay away from the creepy guy? As far as freaking possible.
Well, the thing is this story that we got this from, it's really hard because they label it middle of the day. Apparently the store was busy because she's parked in the middle of the parking lot and she notices someone leaning against the building right by the door. And apparently this is odd. I mean, we're out in public. People are out in public. It's called public for a reason.
Okay. All right, Karen, stop it.
Yeah, and who's the person? What's the context here?
We teach our kids to stop judging people by how they look. At least we should as responsible parents.
Well.
So stop it, Karen.
Well, you don't know. What is that guy doing? Is he after you?
That's just
maybe,
it.
Maybe, but is he waiting for a ride? Did someone go pick up the car?
Right, he may be waiting for his Uber. To maybe, get into a strange person's car.
Maybe he's tired of picking out colors for curtains.
He works at Hot Dog on a Stick, and he's standing outside with that funny beanie on and smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, or it Salvation Army bell ringer.
You said creepy, right?
Yeah.
I'm just kind of going with the theme.
Well, they made him off as creepy, but, you know.
What they mean to talk about is situational awareness. They're
right.
Just doing a very poor job of setting up the situation. And... yes, there are some things you want to pay attention to and decisions you have to make. And if there's an unsavory element that you don't want to walk by, don't walk by them.
Right.
I get it. But what are we getting at here?
Well, they're saying the safe distance for something like that is 25 feet in public.
A lot of times you don't have that kind of
room.
Yeah,
no.
I've been on the street in New York City, and I'll guarantee you don't have that kind of room.
You don't have that kind of room, and if you're not paying attention, it doesn't matter, you know, because what they're getting at here, I'm assuming, is the 21-foot rule. So you want that 25 feet. So what, instead of crossing that distance in a second and a quarter, they're crossing it in a second and a half?
It gives you time to run away.
I've always had an issue putting a foot distance
right.
to a rule.
Right.
I don't walk around carrying a tape measure out of my pocket.
No.
And I'm not going to yell, hey, stop. We need to measure how far you are.
Oh, but he's saying you're in a parking lot, so 2 4-door sedans is about 30 feet.
Okay, fine. But, all right.
Rule of thumb, sure.
But we've talked about this, too. Okay, so I go out and I practice with my new gun and my new holster, and I've got the timer out, and I hit the timer, and, okay, you know, 1.2 seconds, draw to fire. 0.99. 1.25. You know, I'm going to average that out, and I'm, you know, 1.12 seconds, right? And I know that Usain Bolt can run 21 feet in 1.28 seconds, so that means now I'm safe from everybody that's beyond 21 feet. That doesn't work because that goes back to reaction and response, and it takes time for your brain to process all that.
Holy shit, you were fun at parties, aren't you?
Oh, I'm a blah.
You have overthought this to the nth degree.
That's my job.
Look, at the end of the day, people don't react in that kind of time frame. Their brain don't process it fast enough.
No.
By the time you realize that you've got a situation that you may have to defend yourself in,
they're
touching
you.
Yep. So I love the 21-foot rule, the 25-foot rule, the three-car hatchback, whatever it is, rule. But it's all bullshit.
And hey, did he take into account that one of those might be a truck with a hitch off the back? So you're going to trip the guy and break his shin bone anyway.
That's a defense, by the way.
Right?
Yeah, run around a hitch because he might not. Nah, it's just bullshit. At the end of the day, we're talking about situational awareness and preparing yourself to be able to defend yourself. And that does take training. It takes repetition. It takes muscle memory. It has a lot to do with situational awareness. You have to think your way through it. But you have to allow yourself to be just a shade paranoid to even indulge the idea to get training.
Right.
A lot of times people don't go down the training road until they've had their ass kicked.
Well, yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, we've heard this time and time again, you know. The liberal that's been mugged, all of a sudden now they're pro-gun. Clint Smith talks about this. He had a gal that had a scare, and her very wealthy husband, sent her to get training. And Clint gave it to her straight up. He said, look, he doesn't care about you. They're going to kidnap you and the kids. He doesn't care about you. They want his money because they know he wants the kids back. He'll replace you.
That's a horrible thought.
It absolutely is, but it's absolutely true.
You're not wrong. But she's okay, so she was at Clint Smith's class. Getting firearms training, presumably to learn how to handle the firearm that her husband bought her and be able to carry it.
And I can't speak to all that. I just the story that
Smith
I heard.
Class,
I'm going down the road of assumptions, right? As far as I know, she came back time and time again. I think she's probably been through six or eight classes with him, because after the first one and after he put things in perspective, she went, oh.
The light bulb came on.
Yeah.
Right. Just because you have one in your purse or your pocket or on a holster doesn't mean you're proficient with it to be able to use it respectfully and responsibly.
Well, and then you're in public. So now you got to be aware of what's behind the person.
People don't think about themselves, let alone public.
You're going to hurt other people in
sure,
public. You have to be really...
That's the thought you think about when you're sitting in the jail cell after it's all over.
Yeah.
We don't think about that in advance.
Well, you talk about the fallacy of the 21-foot rule. You think about, right now where we're at in Wyoming, it's cold. It's like 15 degrees and the wind's blowing. What we have a wind chill of like -2. We're wearing coats and layers and getting to your handgun. It might take a second.
Yeah, but at the other side of it, fuck you. I'm going to wait to kick your ass till it's warmer. Well, I'm not going to attack you right now. So the 21-foot rule turns into a 2-mile rule.
Well, yeah, but that bad guy, he might be desperate for a hotel room and a warm place to sleep.
I suppose that's possible. He's still not going to want to engage in something. He has no idea how it's going to turn out.
No.
In this weather.
Well, where we live, if I refuse to go into... any store with somebody standing outside looking kind of weird outside the door,
you'd never go into one.
Well, that's probably fair. How bad do you need to go into the store, though? If it makes you uneasy, don't.
God, yeah, I was out of butter, damn it.
Yes, unsalted butter.
Well, duh.
Well, she couldn't find it in the quantities that you require. I don't even want to know what you're doing with all the butter, but you have some now.
It's the cookbook, man. Every recipe starts with a stick of butter.
Yeah, recipes. I'm sure that's it. All right. So back on topic here.
Only good with lube.
That's my line. So situational awareness. They're talking about the defensive mindset, I'm presuming, in this article, because you probably found it on a gun blog somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, there is a mindset that you have a criteria that you have a checkbox list, you're running in your head all the time. If you are situation aware, you don't put yourself in the position to have a problem with the guy at the door at the mall.
Right. Well, and we talked about this like 2 years ago. We talked about this. Brandy and I took our trip to Ireland, and walking around the streets of Dublin and Galway, and that was one of the things that we had discussed beforehand. Was like, I was like, do not let anybody get within arm's reach. Yeah, because I wasn't so worried about firearms over there as pickpockets. I mean, these are major cities, foreign country, and it's a known risk, especially to tourists. Mm-hmm. And we were in the tourist areas. Well, guess where the gypsies and the pickpockets and these low-level criminals, guess where they operate?
I will tell you, some of those folks are good.
They are good.
Really good at it.
You know, I made it a point to keep everything in my front pockets or under some kind of a Velcro flap that it was going to take some work to get to.
Sure. And that's good. That's a great plan. But that arm's length distance is kind of tough, especially in a crowded street.
It is tough, but, you know, you can maintain it. You know, I was making eye contact with everybody that we passed. They knew, I knew that they were there.
Oh, you're that guy.
Well, yeah.
I'm the tourist. Here's the flag on my head. Yes. No, there's a way to temper all that. Get the training. Reassure yourself that you can handle yourself if something does arise, right? That sets you at ease because now you're competent. You're confident. Most folks get mugged because they freeze.
Right.
They don't know what to do, and they absolutely mannequin freeze.
Mm-hmm.
They don't hand their wallet over. The bad guy takes it off of them because they're stuck.
Right.
Once you get a little bit of self-confidence that you can handle yourself, some of that starts to melt away. And your reaction to the threat or the violence in the moment is a completely different response out of a natural conditioning through training.
Well, yeah, because you now have a response.
That's right.
You've trained to do something, no matter what that might be. That's the whole basis of the freeze response is you don't have an index card to look at and go, I should do this.
Right. Fear grabs a hold and you stand still and whatever happens, happens.
Well, yeah, because your brain is trying to figure out, okay, I don't know what to do in this situation because I don't have anything to fall back
on. That's exactly
right. At least with training, now you've got some kind of contextual knowledge that you can reference and go, oh, I should do this.
And there are some good rules of thumb out there. If you're planning a trip, let's say it's low light, no light, right? And you're going to a shopping center, grocery store, mall, whatever. There are some things to consider. A single female, you're a target. You are going to want to park underneath a street light, a parking lot light. Don't bark in the dark shadows of the parking lot. Don't do that. Don't disarm yourself by nature of coming out with your hands full of groceries. Push a cart, right? Put your keys in your hand if you think that there are people around that you don't know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hurt to have your keys in a hand just in cases.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's not paranoia as much as it is you have put yourself in a position where now you're ready if something does happen. You can go home.
And well, let me do the devil's advocate thing. Let me play you for a minute here, because nowadays we don't have car keys like we used to. It's a fob that stays in your pocket, stays in your purse. You don't even have to pull it out. Okay, so because I can guarantee you, there's women out there and even men out there going, "Well, I have the key fob thing. I don't have keys." Okay, you don't have keys, so find something to put in your hand. Maybe it's a flashlight with a bezeled edge.
Yep.
Maybe it's mace. Maybe even those stupid like air horns, the little mini air horns.
And as we've learned recently, a twisted tea can works great.
Oh yeah. I mean, just have something. You know, think about it as you're walking out the store. A lot of times, if I go to the grocery store or whatever, typically I'm armed.
Yes.
But I always have something at hand as I'm walking out of the store. I can throw.
Twisted tea will get you to your pistol.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee it.
Right. And then your pistol gets you to a rifle. Your rifle gets you to your machine gun.
Mm-hmm. Machine gun gets you to your tank. Yes.
So on
it's
and
a
so
progression
forth.
Of things. As long as the threat continues, you have to evolve.
Right.
But there is, back to a mindset. Yet, think it through a little bit. Don't let it hold you from going to the store. Don't live in fear.
No.
That's what they want you to do.
No.
Because then they will succeed because you have a blind spot.
Right. Well, and okay, let's talk about that living in fear thing just for a second, because last night we watched the Eagles absolutely stomp the crap out of the Chiefs. I don't know who saw that coming, but it was funny because an article came up today and they were talking about the last year when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, the party that they had in Kansas City erupted in gang violence.
Yes.
So they're like, you know, let's maybe tone down the celebrations a little bit, guys. Well, the Eagles made sure that's not going to happen. So Kansas City, you are safe this year.
Well, and you're exactly right. Every mayor of a major city that has a pro team that ends up in a championship of some sort, they have that love-hate relationship with the team that wins because often the celebration party gets out of hand. But they don't cater to the fear. They don't say, oh, God, don't win. Right? They prepare. They tell the police that, well, they might come home and party just a little bit too much.
Right.
Be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Mm-hmm.
But keep damage to property in person at a minimum.
Well, and I think that's good advice for just about everybody. Be nice until it's time to not be nice.
And that should be a switch, not a grading scale of a volume knob.
Right.
It's on or it's off. And if when it's time to not be nice, I guarantee you won't like me.
No. And I think it was Dave Spalding that said, you know, the difference between a fight and competition is that a competition has rules, and that if you're not cheating, you're not trying hard enough to win in a fight. Now, I know that's probably totally out of context, and I probably, you know, misnamed the quote, but you get the point.
I do, and it fits exactly in what we're talking about, that mindset. You have got to be ready to go in a flip of a switch, and it's life-threatening.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an arm wrestling match.
No.
You're not going to hug it out. You have to go home. The other person doesn't get to.
No.
And that includes an interceding with law enforcement, because that's going to happen.
Oh, it's absolutely going to happen. And, yeah, be prepared to have your life turned inside out.
Erase those nudie pictures on your phone. clear your browser history. It's all going to come out if you get pinched because you're defending yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
And often the good guy gets turned into a bad guy, not because of the incident, because of something that happened days before the incident.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It happens all the time. God, I'm really glad I grew up in a world before cell phones.
Right.
Because when we had a fight, the stuff that we ended up doing was pretty not cool. And if there had been photo record or the shit talk recorded in advance of said fight, yeah, it would have been a whole different story.
Yeah, but you remember, though, we grew up in a world where you had a fight, and it might take a day or two to get over it, but you ended up shaking hands and went, all right, that was dumb.
I only had a few that didn't do that,
and
you're right.
But we also grew up in a world where you learn to take a fall. You learn to take a hit. I mean, I would question anybody under 30 today. I would be curious to see how many of them had actually been punched in the face at any point in their life.
And by the same token, growing up right now, you feel like you can say anything to anybody without any repercussions.
Right.
We grew up in a world where you thought it through a little bit before you opened your pie hole.
That's because there weren't any anti-bullying crap going on.
You couldn't hide behind a keyboard and a computer screen.
No.
You said shit that was out of school. They met you after school, and you had to atone for it.
If they let you go that long.
That's right.
You know, the surprise punch in the face, that was a thing.
Sucker punch. It's a total thing. But today, people do and say things that are the complete id. They are not social decorum. They're not well thought through. They have very little respect for their fellow man. And half the time, they deserve the beating they get.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's very unpopular talk, but it's the honest humanity truth.
Well, it is.
Violence solves problems.
Oh, you're going to see that, I think, a lot. You know, the media right now, especially if you look at all the things going on with the herd, I mean the View, there's lawsuits. Joy Behar got fired. They say that she left, but I don't think that was by choice, because of the lawsuits coming down and the defamation that she's been spewing. You know, and that all is just because they're so terrified of a Trump presidency.
And they're placating to a crowd that is trying to soak that up. But the network also understands that they have a responsibility for the shit that's said on their airwaves.
Well, yeah, if they're willing to air it, they're culpable.
That's right. And that's legally been proven time and time again.
Right.
So the fact that they've got away with it this long boggles my mind.
Ah, well, we'll see what happens. Who cares? All right, let's go hit a commercial or two, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about your fancy pants class with the tactical reload.
All right.
Beans, bullets, Band-Aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. Enter Deer Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
All right. So the way you combat the creepy guy standing next to the store is you go take the Hi-Zoot class, right?
Sure.
Now you get some sort of level of training to build that confidence so you don't live in fear. Yes.
Now, I came across an article. And I've actually been sitting on this for a while. It's been sitting on my desk for 6 months. But it was an article talking about kind of the fallacy of the tactical reload. And I'm probably going to get hate mail on this one, but I agree with it. I think the tactical reload is kind of dumb.
Well, and I'm going to just offer in context, we have to define exactly what the tactical reload is. Is this a mall ninja action on the range to make you look cool, or this is a proficient action to top your firearm off when you've gone to cover?
Well, these guys say, so you don't want to dump perfectly good rounds on the ground because you might need them later. Therefore, take a little longer reloading and capture a partially spent magazine in your hand as you simultaneously use that same hand to acquire and insert a fresh magazine into your weapon.
All right. That's bullshit. I've been in a gunfight. And I will tell you right now, you do not have the manual dexterity, unless you are super high-level trained and you do this all the time, to capture a mag in your hand and manage your weapon and manage the threat all at the same time. Complete bullshit. You do not have the dexterity to do that. You will drop your firearm, maybe, in the process of trying to switch magazines. I mean, that's retarded. Don't do that.
And that's kind of my point, too. Like, in the middle of a fight with the adrenaline that you've got going, possible rounds coming your direction, you're gonna perform this complex procedure because I only have 12 or maybe I've only got 8 rounds left in this magazine, and I want to make sure I have 12. It doesn't make sense to me.
I'll tell you from experience. I trained for years. I thought I was proficient. I thought I was able to handle myself under stress. When a shot rings off and it cracks out by you, all your personal decorum leaves. You are a shaky, adrenaline jacked up mess.
Mm-hmm.
And that's someone who's trying to do this.
Right.
The first time you run into this, you can't shit in a bathtub. It is horrific. And trying to do a reload because somebody said, hey, you should do this before your gun runs dry, that's dumb.
Right.
Perform a reload when you're out of ammo because you have to.
Well, and let's look at the statistics for a minute, okay? But we've already talked about, and we've established this several times, that, you know, people will sit there after they've been in a gunfight. I shot 4 rounds, 5 rounds maybe, but the gun's dry. People tend to pull the trigger until it doesn't go bang anymore.
And then ask them how many shots they fired. They can't answer you.
They can't. Because it happens, number one, so fast.
That's right.
You know, we've talked about this, the tachypsychia, bradypsychia, where, it's like they can't tell you that they reached down, got their grip on the gun, drew it from the holster. They can't tell you that. They're just like, the gun was in my hand.
You know, and this is one of those topics I really wish we had DeSargo on the line, because I don't know a guy smarter about this stuff than him.
Yeah.
But this article, when they talk about that, this is straight Call of Duty shit. Don't do that. That'll get you killed.
Well, and I think a lot of this comes from IDPA.
In a competition environment, nobody's shooting back?
Right.
Okay, fine. Do what you want.
But they adapted this to combat, and I think that was one of the dumbest things they ever did.
Now, I said it was accepted in law enforcement, too. Now, keep in mind, this was an article in 2006.
No, I get that. But it's one of those things. Like, they were debunking this in 2006.
Yeah.
But it's still there.
It is still there.
And still qualified for LE training?
I don't know about today, but that's what the big deal was then.
Interesting.
Because let's go back to you. You've been shot at. You've been in a gunfight. You have actually been hit.
Yes.
How many times did you shoot? And what was your tactical reload?
To this day, I don't actually even really know the number that came out of my gun. I didn't get the opportunity to empty my firearm, but I did shoot more rounds than I thought I did.
Moral of the story, get out of the way.
Well, that was my job to get in the way.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so
I hate it when that's your job.
And the reason I don't do that job anymore is I had no desire to be a human shield the rest of my life. That one rattled me up pretty good. And I had done some stupid stuff and been on some successful missions prior to that. But when it really goes down and the rounds are coming at you, your world changes. You find out a lot about yourself and who you are and who you're not real quick.
Let me ask you something real quick. Do you know what caliber you were hit with?
38.
And would it have mattered had it been a 30-06?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not talking about physical damage. I'm talking about psychological.
No.
Yeah.
Physical damage, it would have mattered. I did have level 4 plates.
Well, no, but I'm just talking psychologically. You got shot. It didn't matter if it was a BB or a freaking grenade.
But I will tell you, in the moment, all I knew is my arm didn't work.
Right.
I didn't know I'd been shot.
Well, see that.
I was a little bit concerned that I had a dead arm. I didn't understand why.
Yeah. I'll throw out a shameless plug for someone who's not a sponsor, the Accuracy Under Fire guys.
Oh, yeah.
They got it right.
Toy you saw.
Yeah. That Brandy tortured me with.
it straight up. I did the instinctual thing. I got in the way, but in the moment, I couldn't have affected a reload if I wanted to. There's no way on the planet that was going to happen. Advocating for it, training for it, wouldn't have mattered.
The only place I can see it is if you are cognizant as umph in the moment to know, oh man, I've fired 10 out of 12 rounds out of this magazine. I've got cover. I've got a second to breathe.
Correct.
Then fine. If you want to and you have the ability, do it.
Correct. Now,
but
the only ones I know that take that level of risk every day, all day, are our boys in the sandbox.
Right. It's some of the SRT guys.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe. And then I'm talking high level FBI hostage rescue team.
And you'd have to have that level of adrenaline dump under control enough to be cognizant about it.
Right.
Because there is a disconnect between thought process and actions in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Hell no, just dump your mag, put the new one in, walk away.
Agreed. That's my thing.
Gun runs
dump
dry.
An empty mag that is no good to you anymore.
Yep, affect the reload when your gun runs empty. This tactical reload, it's a great training aid, and I think it teaches you how to understand your gun manipulation, and it's a good training aid. But until you can do this under fire, is a bad thing to advocate for it. It'll get you killed.
I would really seriously be curious to see who could really do it effectively under fire.
99.9% of your civilians could not.
I'm not even sure I'd give it that much.
Now, combat vet that's been there, done that, he might be able to
maybe.
Do that. But most folks, even if they train it all the time through IPSC conditions, no. This is not a thing.
I just thought it was funny because it's something that I've talked about for years. Like this is dumb.
Well, I mean, train it. You need to know your firearm. You need to understand your round count and be cognizant. That teaches all of those good things, and you're learning how to handle it. But don't expect to do this under stress.
See, and I would argue that I would say don't count it. And have somebody else load your mag so you don't know when it's going to go dry. Because, like we said, in a fight, you had no idea how many rounds you fired.
I know, but they're advocating to reload top off before it goes dry.
I don't know when it's going to go dry because I can't tell you how many rounds I just fired because I'm in a fight and that's not where my head's at.
And it's just a manipulation of your firearm in presentation.
Right.
Train it. It's fine. But your better training is going to be run the gun dry, load it when you have to.
Right. Yeah. Focus on that. Ooh, that's what that recoil impulse was a little bit different. Oh, gun's dry.
That's correct.
So which is a better tactic for me? Should I learn the tactical reload or proper distance to deal with David Hogg's new position?
Oh, my God. Oh, you brought him up.
We're going to go into that. stay away from David Hogg. He will give you some sort of slimy disease.
So distance. Okay.
Distance is always... Distance. If you don't have to put yourself into the fray...
And I'm totally good with, like, what are we 2,000 miles from Washington?
Yeah, there's some good folks in Washington, but most of them are pretty slimy.
Yeah.
What's interesting to me, if you're going to talk about David Hogg, right? This kid rose from an activist, gun control activist, frothing at the mouth, absolute idiot, to now he's the Democratic Party's voice.
He's the vice chairman of the DNC.
Right.
I mean, so that's high level.
He is going to create more problems for the Democratic Party than he's going to solve because his playbook is say the most asinine rhetoric as possibly as loud as you can. He's Greta with a set of balls. This kid's not good for the Democratic Party.
No, he's not. Well, no, he's perfect because he fits right in. If you look at, okay, Trump's been in office, what are we at now? Like 20 days?
Yeah.
Give or take? And the Democrats are number one, losing their freaking minds, mostly because they're terrified because all of the crap that they have been doing for the last 40 years is being uncovered. And I mean, in a matter of days, they are scared to death.
Finally got to look at the books.
David Hogg fits right in with them because this is their tactic. Just scream hysterics and try and scare the American people to not look at how bad they're being raped.
Well, and you have a great point. He wrote the book, was it Never Again? With him and his sister.
Yeah, him and his sister, yeah.
And they pledged the dollars to go to charity. Well, I can't prove it in front of me.
I have researched the crap out of it. I can't find it.
I'll bet you the money that was made off that book went to fund his PAC.
That's my guess because they keep going to how much money this PAC has, and it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $8 million. But I can't, you know, he claims that some of it came from all of these anonymous donors that pledged less than, I think it's like $200, and then some of it came here. My guess is, yeah, he donated that money to his own PAC or to his own little 501c3 that he's got going.
And the integrity he's got, he'll call that charity.
Yeah.
And pocket it.
Oh, yeah.
Right. If you listen to this kid, and he's a kid, he's got rhetoric down to a T.
Mm-hmm.
And the louder and more emotional he gets, the more of the Hitler signs he throws out.
Oh, I know. But, you know, it's kind of hard. He's what, 24 now?
Is he that old?
24, 26, something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, we have a press secretary that's 27 years old. We have people that are in the Doge Commission as young as 19.
It's all right.
But they're effective and they're smart.
They're good at research.
They are.
They understand the systems and how to get the data out. They're good at it. And that's why they're there.
That's exactly why they're there, and that's the difference. So I mean, I'm going to call these people kids because I mean they could be my kids. I have kids that old, but at the same time, like I don't care what your age is. Yes, it's remarkable. You made vice DNC chair at 24 years old. Congratulations, you're the youngest ever. That's a feat. But how you got there and why you're there and what you represent, I'm sorry, I don't agree.
Well, back to the Democrats. This is a move that they completely didn't think through again. They're pushing the guy forward that has the most radical rhetoric of anybody out there, thinking that's going to persuade more people.
Well, you did tell me that Tim Walz approved.
Well, yeah, there's a vote of confidence right there. But you watch this last election. Democrats were leaving the Democratic Party because... of the rhetoric. They got fucking Looney Tunes and what they put out.
Yeah.
And the people that they ran was absolutely crazy. The lunacy's got to stop because their party is eating itself right now.
That's okay, fine. You know what? I say let them.
You say run him.
No, I let them eat themselves. I mean, I think that what's going to come out in the next 2 years, if even that long, maybe only a year at the pace that Trump and Doge is doing all of this stuff, and now that he's finally starting to get his cabinet approved, I'm saying like the Democrats, the entire party is going to get wiped out either through they're going to lose their funding because their little slush fund over here from USAID got hosed.
Yeah, that's okay.
Or through following the money, there's going to be so many indictments, there won't be any Democrats left.
Yeah, I thought about this morning. With all the stuff going on with USAID, we're not going to be necessarily able to afford the legal battles that are going to come out of this because that's a lot. That's a lot.
We'll be able to pay for the lawyers for the money that we're saving by not sending it.
Yeah, but then you got to be careful how you appropriate those funds because then you get painted with the same brush.
That's all right. Marco Rubio just took it over.
Well, all right.
But Secretary of State now controls it.
If you sit back and you look at this, anybody that's watched House of Cards on Netflix, take that snapshot into what politicians think and how they work.
Mm-hmm.
And when I watched this as a bit of entertainment, it struck me that I might not be seeing complete fiction.
No, I was actually really, really impressed with that. And I liked that show. I felt it kind of ended abruptly, but I get it. But the way they portrayed the way the politics worked, I actually thought was kind of realistic.
And, well, talking with folks like Harriet and mm-hmm. folks like Senator Brasso that have been on the Hill, I'm convinced that's how things get done.
Right.
Currently.
And I've heard that they based the Underwoods on the Clintons.
Well, that makes
sense. And it kind of makes a lot of sense.
No surprise, yeah. But if you're listening to this and you think David Hogg might be a good choice for the Democratic Party's leader, watch House of Cards for a second and see how those folks work, and then you'll giggle just like we are.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I am all for it. I am 100% behind Hogg. Go Hogg.
We need to make T-shirts.
I mean, I think you need to run the DNC exactly the way you've been running your life the last 6 years.
It was kind of like me kind of rooting for Hunter Biden
mm-hmm.
and his gun charges because of the way he posed a defense.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was brilliant. And it would have eliminated pretty much the 4473 at that time.
Right.
But you can't make this up, and it is absolutely surreal.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. Every day, like, I watch all the stuff going on with the auditing of these agencies. And every time they go in to do an audit of a new agency, and the pace is just unreal. The Democrats are just losing their minds every time. And I honestly think this is part of the strategy. And it's a strategy that I think that could be adopted to self-defense. Overwhelm your opposition with pace. And what I mean by that is do things so fast they can't keep up.
That's exactly right.
And this is one of those things like I've really pushed hard in, especially my carbine classes, because I feel like, you know, if you're at a point you're in a gunfight with a carbine, it's not a counter ambush situation anymore. You're on the attack, overwhelming force to stop the fight as quickly and efficiently as possible.
That's exactly right.
And I think it's a valid tactic, and I think Trump has adopted this. And just set the pace so fast. You watch the media. They don't even know what to be mad at because there's so much going on so fast.
They're mad they got caught. They're not mad that it was all misappropriation of funds or that it was illegal. They're mad they got caught.
Well, agreed. But there's so many places where they're getting caught, they don't even know what to scream about every day because there's just so much.
I would accept all their resignations.
Tomorrow.
Because if you can't defend it, you should go away.
Agreed. Agreed. So, wow. So we went from, I guess that does kind of tie it together. You talked about the creepy guy in front of the store. That could totally be David Hogg. He is a creepy guy in front of the store for sure. I ain't shopping there if he's standing there.
No. No.
So, until next week, what are we going to blame? Can't really blame the gun.
You blame the Democrats.
I'll blame the Democrats. I'm in.